This podcast is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to help expand our programming, head to patreon.com/talkstarwars and become a TSW patron. You'll receive exclusive podcasts, access to a VIP Facebook group, monthly prize draws, Facebook Live sessions, and much, much more. Head to patreon.com/talkstarwars and become a TSW patron today, and the Force will be with you. Always. Welcome to TSW Comics,
a monthly look between the covers of Marvel's Star Wars comic book series.
Hello everyone, welcome back to TSW Comics issue 6. I'm Mark.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Tim.
We're a three-man team.
We are.
Yes, we are.
This is a good thing. This is a good thing. And what a month for it as well. We've had, it's been quite the month this month for comic books with New York City Comic Con and the news that's come out of that event. So we've got plenty to talk about this month.
It's been exciting time for comic book readers, Star Wars fans in general too. We've got the trailer dropping today.
Yeah, well, tomorrow for me, it's very nearly time for me to go to bed, so it'll be tomorrow morning for me. I envy you. I envy you guys. You're going to be ahead of me.
Well,
just a little bit.
By the time this podcast actually comes out, everybody will have seen it. So we're
yeah, it's kind of a moot point. I can even pretend. can make myself feel that much better. How are we doing anyway, chaps? How's your month been?
It's on this end, it's been fantastic. I've just absolutely buried myself in Star Wars. It's a build up to this trailer. I finally got enough time to sit down and organize all my comics. I had about 100 or so comics lying around here, and I've bagged and boarded. Whether it was easy or not, I put everything into my Marvel Comics app as well to have everything digitally and physically. And once getting through that arduous task of doing that was a giant pain because the Marvel comic app is a horrendous thing to use.
Do you not like it? No. I heard you say this on the Nerd Room. You're not a big fan, no?
Well, it's not so much the app that I don't like. It's moving my physical copies with the codes into the Marvel Comics app. It's really laggy, and I bet you there's some comic books I put in there 5 or 6 times before the code was actually accepted to fall into my digital library. Mm. And I'm not sure what the deal is with that, and they expire too, the codes, which has been really frustrating me. So the books I had waited, 3, 4, 5 months to put in are actually not valid anymore. So I'm actually sending a huge list to Marvel to say, look, I've paid for these. I've paid for the digital copy. Can I please have this code reenacted, because it just doesn't seem fair to me to have a comic book that you've bought, you can't actually physically get, or I guess digitally get, the comic book anymore because it's expired.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with the sort of numbers you're dealing with. Sorry, Rob, cut you off there.
No, I was going to say, and also too, if you're paying a premium for the book, like there's some books that are actually a little bit more pricey, and rightfully so, they give you a digital copy. Like, it's great. Like, but like you said, Tim, if you can't use it, it's...
it's like they used to have an expiry date on those prepaid Visa cards and all that. And finally someone came around and said, look, you can't, this is actual currency. Now this doesn't expire. That's not a thing that can happen. And with movies, they had that issue as well, is that the movie codes that come with your Blu-rays and that used to expire. And they've done away completely with that as well. So I'm looking for Marvel to switch this over to the comic books and say, you have forever. Because if these fall into a long box at some point down the road and someone picks these up in 5 years, they're going to, if the code's in there still, if it's a mint comic book, they're going to maybe want to use that code. And I think people should have the opportunity to do that. So that's my little comic book rant for the week.
Yeah, no, well, why not? It's a good point.
Especially once you use the code, then it's invalid. So it's not like you can use the code, put it in your long box, 20 years later, have somebody else buy it and use the same code again. So what's the matter with having it be just use it once, but have it never expire? You're right.
Yeah.
It's not like
it's a bit odd.
Not that they have to ship anything for you, is it? It's digital media being managed. Someone's just pushing ones and zeros around. Where's the beef? I don't get it.
Yeah, and then usually we just went through this whole issue with the digital comic book being taken away and then given back, and now yes. we get a trade paperback with it. So it's actually the deal is better now, because usually you get a trade paperback with the digital copy from your physical copy. But now I'm running into this issue of the app, which stops me from putting in comic books because it takes so long to do. I swear I was at it for about 3 hours.
Wow.
Not a word of a lie to get all of these books in. And there was a lot of books, but it was just this continuous, you'd hit enter and then all the codes would disappear and they have to re-input them all. So it was just giant pain.
That's frustrating. Oh,
lovely.
See, I use the Marvel app exclusively and to read the comic books, but rather than like the Comixology app, which I have set up, but I have this little system in place now where I buy all my books from Amazon. And then they drop down into Comixology. Then because I've linked my Marvel app to my Comixology app, they drop straight into there. And I'm sometimes getting these books for half the price of Marvel's just through buying them through Amazon. But they drop down through the apps and they sit right in the same app as the expensive version. And with it, sometimes I have to like jump out. Once I've completed my purchase, I might have to jump out of the app and go back in for it to refresh and load the freshly purchased book. That's the only gripe I have with the Marvel app. Other than that, I've got everything sitting there on my smart list ready to read and reread to my heart's content. So I'm a happy camper.
Yeah.
But Rob, you're all physical, so none of this means anything to you, does it really?
Well, yeah, I have all physical. And like I said, I've had an issue with getting those stickers out of the books where I'm actually ripped a copy of my number one Star Wars. And it was like, oh no, I heard that was just a thing. It was probably, we were talking with some of the VIPs, from Talk Star Wars, and they're saying, no, they've never had an issue. So that was probably, maybe I'm hoping it was just a one-time thing where I had an issue getting the sticker off and keeping the book in mint condition.
That was, I think, on our second episode, Rob.
That was right off the hop. Yeah. So, but yeah, I go all physical all the time. And it's just, I don't know. I think that might end if I ended up moving away into a more rural community. I think I'd have to complete the runs that I've started, but the ones that I'm halfway through or just jumping into, I don't think I'd have a problem with jumping on the digital for them.
No, even with the digital, with trades that are a little bit harder to get.
Yeah.
Or if I'm actually going after a trade, I don't mind having a digital trade as opposed to the physical copies.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm getting a physical copies, it's got to be single issues and all that. But a trade, I'm okay with just pure digital. It kind of keeps the book stacking to a minimum, especially when you have limited space and all that. But for me, yeah, physical and digital. I like to sit on that fence. I'm the same way with movies, too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm exclusively digital movies as well. So I'm just a digital whore. I think we'd probably best move on before I expose myself for being such a digital whore. All right. Let's talk about New York City Comic Con then. So, Tim, you dropped this into the show notes. The Lucasfilm Publishing panel. That was was that the biggest thing, the biggest Star Wars event at NYCC this year?
As far as I could tell, and it's interesting because we've come up into this point in time in nerddom, in Star Wars fandom, that we have like 5 or 6 humongous Comic-Cons or conventions or whatever for news to drop. So I find that this year especially, we've had little tiny bits of news dropped at each individual convention, with the exception of Celebration, that is. But we don't get a lot or the volume of announcements that we used to get at a New York Comic-Con or at a San Diego Comic-Con because it's split between so many different things. But yeah, Star Wars, the Lucasfilm Publishing was the biggest thing that I could find on the docket for Star Wars. There wasn't a whole huge presence there unless you're actually physically there, because they had a pretty cool setup, it looked like, on the floor where they had some of the costumes and some other insights towards some of the weaponry and all that.
Yeah, I saw some of that. I saw some of the images that were snapped up on Star Wars News Network of some of the displays. It was like a data bank, told us a little bit about Kylo Ren's helmet and lightsaber and things like that. So that was all very, very interesting. And of course we had the Thrawn novel announcement.
Yes.
The Thrawn Alliances.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
So I'm certain that will be followed up by a mini series of comic books, because that happened with the original Thrawn, right? Or has it happened yet?
Is
it out yet?
February 2018.
Right. So February. So we're gearing up for that. So Alliances is probably a way away yet, I suppose, but
I think it's next summer it drops, actually.
The book.
Summer 2018. The book, yeah.
Yeah.
So, so then they had the comic book.
The comic series probably be the year after them.
Yeah. We're probably looking a year on year out for a comic book on that.
I think, Mark, you were mentioning earlier earlier in the season, because of Celebration and now with the Disney exclusive con, what do they call it?
D23,
yeah. So what, because they have their own conventions now too, like if they have news, of course they're going to say it at New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con, but they're going to save the meat for their own. It only makes sense, right?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. It's nice for them to have their own almost proprietary events, and they're even setting up their own proprietary TV streaming service, aren't they? So they're trying to keep everything in-house as much as possible. And little things like the stories we're going to discuss here this evening, like the next couple of IDW things, it's nice that they're in the right discussion group at New York Comic Con. You know, it's not like they could only do that at Celebration, because it might be too niche at Celebration. But talking about comic books at a comic book convention, that's exactly the right place to do it.
Yeah. Of course.
I find myself, though, going into these, especially New York Comic Con and San Diego and that, I'm expecting a lot. And we got a few little tidbits of information of what's coming, but I was expecting another big comic book to be announced here, because New York Comic Con, it's the home base of Marvel. It's a home base of comics for them. I was expecting just a tiny bit more. I'm not disappointed with what we got, but it looked like a lot of the discussion at the comic book panel or the publishing panel was just going through the books that they've released or what's coming up next as far as running into The Last Jedi and that.
Well, it makes sense too, because I remember at Celebration this year they had the Forces of Destiny's dolls or played, like, for they're releasing a Princess Leia and Jin and all the figures from the new animated shorts we're getting, and I found out about it like just in passing, and I was there like because it was just so much information that was going on, and there was so much with the trailers and this release, and here's a nibble at the new Rebels that are coming out, and here's this and here's that. I'm like, oh wait, they have a new toy run too? It's like, what? It was completely lost on me until after I got to I went home and I watched all these things on YouTube, the stuff that I missed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh wow, oh, I missed that. I didn't even know that was going on. And normally, like when you get these toy runs or a new comic run or something, it should be an event on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's big enough news, right?
Yeah, it's a good point, because mixed in with everything else that's coming out, it's hard sometimes to see some of these things like the Force of Destiny IWD comic and that. And from your perspective, when you guys were down at Celebration, I feel like I was getting more news because I was sitting on this end of it. But you guys were actually experiencing it. I'm seeing everything that's coming at me. I do have proper – we had proper Wi-Fi, and you guys were probably in and out of Wi-Fi connection and all that.
No idea.
But sitting on this side from the periphery almost of a convention, we're getting all the news as it happens, and we're able to focus in on it. Well, you guys are waiting in a line, and so it's kind of one of those balance things between being at a convention and being on this side of it. It's difficult to not be there, but at the same time, you get all that much more information.
I think, Mark, you said it best when we were at Celebration, that it was like we're almost looking at like a tapestry or a painting on the wall, and we were nose to nose with this painting, and we can smell it, we can feel it, we can see it, and it's nice and beautiful, but we couldn't step back and see it for its entirety.
Yeah, nothing was in context until we stepped away from it and binged hours of it on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Tim, I was envious of you guys, because that was the position I was planning to be in. I was planning to be in the God seat at home with YouTube running all the time, grabbing these stories, writing them up. Instead, Rob and I just stood in endless queues, having a great time, because we met so many of the Commonwealth people, met tons of listeners and had a great time. But, you know, we stood there waiting for our X-Wing Lukes at the Hasbro panel, looking at the Forces of Destiny on the side of the Hasbro pop-up shop, thinking, I wonder what that is, and getting no information.
Yeah.
Getting no information at all. It was incredibly frustrating.
Well, I'll have to say I was not envious of everybody at home. I loved it. I suggest going. But then again, like as far as getting the breaking stories, it was extremely difficult because we were, like you said, it was right
too close. Too close to the source. Far too close.
So back to the point, you're right, guys. I think having comic releases or news at Comic Cons makes Perfect sense.
Perfect sense. Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into some of this stuff then. So we've got a couple of, well, we've got a few IDW bits to discuss, one of which features some input from Alan Tudyk, who has returned to write at least some of a Star Wars Adventures book. Am I right?
Yeah, it looks that way. He's writing the K2 stuff, which is kind of cool. And it's just this whole Star Wars adventure thing, because I know we got going down this path last month, about IWD's role within Star Wars comic book publishing. And personally, I haven't jumped into any of this. But looking back on what we had discussed a few weeks ago, it appears that it's this whole nice little run that was announced at Celebration. And it's really pointed, and it looks like that IWD is found this niche role within Star Wars publishing to publish towards children, or people that are younger coming into Star Wars. So yet another avenue similar to the Forces of Destiny for the visual. This is for kind of that reading and art medium for children. And I really like the idea of it, having a young daughter as to having this avenue and having this way to get into Star Wars that isn't necessarily the movies or the films. It's kind of the small steps into this. So I'm really looking forward to introducing these new Star Wars adventure books to my daughter in a year or two, just to be able to flip through and get an idea of the characters, because she's already kind of there, but she's just not at a point where she can sit and get through a comic book. But it looks like for these Star Wars adventures, particularly issue number 3, Alan Tudyk is coming back to write our one of the fan favorites here in K2. And I think it's pretty cool to have someone that voiced this character, someone that brought the character to life from a motion capture as well as kind of embodying the whole role in itself, to kind of sit down and write a comic book about him, or write his lines at least. I think that's pretty cool.
It is, particularly like what Alan had to say here, this quote. He said, I wrote some of K2SO's words in this. I know how he thinks. I know how he speaks, how he thinks, since I spoke and thunk him in Rogue One. Inimitable Alan Tudyk. Sorry, Rob, you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to mention more to Tim's point earlier, or what we were talking about. We were literally recording this very exact podcast at Celebration, and we had no idea of this news. And it's right over our heads.
Exactly. But, I was unaware of this until we spoke last month.
Yeah.
About exactly. IDW's involvement, because I thought it was exclusively Marvel these days. So, yeah, we're way behind on this news.
Yeah, and I've read the first two, and they're for, you mean, young readers, but they're still entertaining, and it's not giving you anything you don't need to know. It's not giving you anything that's a must-have to go towards the next movie or anything else coming up, but they're nice, a little. Probably the closest thing is Forces of Destiny. When you see those on YouTube, they're nice little snippets. They're great. They're entertaining. Give you a little insight into the character, but not necessary. But at the same time, very easy to take in, because it is obviously for the younger readers.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great what they're doing here. I think providing a really low barrier of entry for Star Wars first, particularly for younger people. You have your action figure avenue. You do have the films. They're great. They're to a degree pointed at a younger audience. But this, again, is another great way to get young people into Star Wars, and it gets people reading as well. So I think it kind of ticks both of those boxes as far as here's a different type of media that you can get into for Star Wars, as well as you're kind of developing the child at the same time. So I really like that avenue that they're taking here, and how IWD in particular has found this little niche area of Star Wars that they can provide these type of things, and then they're expanding into the Forces of Destiny as well.
Yeah, and it's like you say, it's almost a gateway drug. Really appealing to the young reader, and if they bring out a range, I mean, look at this stylistic cover that we've got on issue 3 with Finn and the little comic book version of Chewbacca down there in the bottom corner. These are really gorgeous looking illustrations. I can imagine a range of action figures, even if they're limited, spinning out of this, because we've got the Forces of Destiny, and that went hand in hand with a released wave of merchandise, which obviously Rob and I, that was our first exposure to the concept of the Forces of Destiny. But if Star Wars Adventures was to become a range of collectibles as well, then they're getting a whole new audience on two fronts, both collecting and comic books, and bringing them right in to Star Wars from a very young age.
Absolutely. And also, a lot of people are looking at Marvel handing this, oh, here, you IDW, you can do this, because it doesn't mean much. I've had nothing but awesome experiences with IDW. I love them. I've read every single one of their Star Trek Boldly Go. I know it's Star Trek, not Star Wars, but they're a fantastic book. There's nothing wrong with the company. They do a great job. They do have great artists and great storytellers. And it's just, I think it's just another avenue and maybe a way to split up the reading from adult to younger.
What about canon concerns? Obviously with where these stories are being pitched, we're not going to have to worry. I think they're kind of taking their foot off the canon pedal a little bit at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not a huge fan of this idea of soft canon. Even within the 40th anniversary book, from a certain point of view, mm-hmm. That kind of worries me a little bit. But stories like this that are meant for children, we've got all kinds of these young reader adaptations, young reader novels too, that aren't a comic book style. That I've never been too concerned with canon. They can play a bit of fast and loose there for me. These aren't intended for us, I would say. They're not intended to be hard canon, I wouldn't think. I believe they are considered canon, but if they're going to kind of play with canon a bit or play with that continuity, I'm okay with them doing it in these books. It doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah, I almost look at it like watching droids and Ewoks animated in the 80s.
Yeah.
You remember, it was there. Yes, it meant something. It was supposed to be canon, except you could kind of almost, you can play a little bit more fast and loose with it. Like I know I just finished issue 2 of the Star Wars Adventures. And there's some things in it that are like, it doesn't quite make sense. You can see it happening and you can see why they put it in, but it doesn't quite blend into like Force Awakens the way you, as an adult reader, you'd want it to.
Right.
But for a younger reader, it's a great book. It's a perfect story. There's a good, great ending and a moral lesson. And, you know, it's everything you'd expect it to be.
Yeah, well, even the title Star Wars Adventures, I kind of take this from the perspective of that new Luke book that's coming out, The Legends of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah,
is that these are told from a perspective and may not necessarily reflect exactly what's going on in canon proper. Is that this is just a perspective of a story, and it's meant for younger children, so maybe it's told by younger children. I haven't read any of these, so that's kind of how I'm looking at it from that perspective, is that it's a story told by a child, say, or by a younger storyteller to a younger audience. So if they're going to kind of flex things and be a bit more liberal with canon, I think this is a place to do it.
That's a really good point, actually, because it brings me to a quote of Pablo Hidalgo, who was talking about, I think there's a story in A Certain Point of View that involves Greedo shooting first over Han stealing a girlfriend or something. It's a very... I won't get into spoiler territory, but it would appear that in that book it sort of reframes the shooting of Greedo as Han shooting first. So, and Pablo's comment on it was, and I really love this, it's really cute. He said, two men entered a booth, one died, reports vary. And that is really great. It's exactly what you just said, Tim, about people telling stories, recounting tales, and then you get the opportunity to take artistic license with those tales and tell them from different perspectives. So we get something as the audience, we get the position prime to consider, but then when you take in these other bits of media, you can color that prime position you have, the God seat, with some of the other information around and see how it might have been biased. So if these books take that sort of liberty, I'm totally okay with that.
I'd agree with you, but one thing on that though, I met Paul Blake, the gentleman who was in the Greedo outfit,
yes,
from No Hope last weekend. He gave me an autograph and he signed it, Rob, always shoot first, Greedo, Paul Blake. So if that is anything what Pablo Hidalgo was saying, it's, you know, I got it right from the source. He's
well,
pretty...
You can't argue with that.
No, exactly. He gave me fair warning.
Brilliant.
I'm emailing Pablo as we speak.
Yes.
Okay, we've mentioned it a couple of times this evening, Forces of Destiny. This too is getting a limited... So no, actually, it's not a limited series. It's a weekly series from IDW called Star Wars Adventures Forces of Destiny. So this is kind of wonderful for another reason. This is clearly young readers, probably not as young as the other Star Wars Adventures title we were just discussing. But this is almost exclusively, in fact, I think it is exclusively female creatives.
Yes, it looks that way, yeah.
So we've got female-centric stories surrounding the wonderful heroines of Star Wars and being brought to us by creators such as Delilah S. Dawson, Beth Revis, Jodie Hauser, Devin Grayson. A real complement of female creatives. What do you make of this, women creating female stories for the younger female fan?
Fantastic. I'm a huge fan of the Forces of Destiny, the YouTube show, or whatever you want to call it, the little serial thing. And this is great. This is another great avenue, I think, for people to enter into Star Wars. And if it's focused a bit more on the female audience, particularly the younger female audience, I am all for this. I have a young daughter. She's just 3. She's not quite there with all this yet. But this is going to be something that I'm going to point her at later on down the road. She knows who R2-D2 is. She knows who BB-8 is. She even knows who Darth Vader is. But having these heroines that I can say, look, there's a comic book, there's shows, there's all this type of media for you to jump into. And then move yourself into some of the bigger stuff. I think this is absolutely fantastic. I've been nothing but and will always be supportive of these type of ventures for Star Wars.
Well said.
Yeah, I'm the same. And I dislike the pushback people are giving with like, oh, you have the female characters. You have to have female writers. Well, no, it's perfect sense. You have to get the right people for the right job. And who, especially when you're looking at these characters, these awesome role models. I know I got a couple daughters myself, and I'd love for them to look up to these characters for what they are. And who would know better than to write them? Like, it's I don't know if I'm making any sense. It's just the people thinking that, oh, they're putting these out and they're having female writers because they're trying to balance the scales. Well, no, this is the right people, the right writers for the right job.
Yeah.
And it's not because because they're kid books. It's because these are powerful women, and this is the way it should be. Like, what would I know about writing about? You know what I mean? Like, from a male point of view, I just don't like the pushback that people are thinking that there is some balance or equal opportunity or balanced scales. No, these are the right ladies for this job. It's perfect.
That's it. We're one step. This is getting us one step closer to being able to look at the creative process for Star Wars, and really it's really for anything, because we've just seen it being hugely successful in movies at DC this summer with Wonder Woman. But you've got the right people creating the right content, and at some point no one will even bat an eyelid about who it is or what gender, what position they're coming at this from. It's just going to be about getting that story told and seeing the right person, the right creative in the big seat. Star Wars is really being led by women now, with Kathy and Kiri Hart running the story group, Kathy overseeing everything. The protagonists of these new movies have been largely female, and it's been a breath of fresh air to see a different sensibility on screen. And I welcome it. I applaud it. I look forward to the day when we can get past the fact that it's not so much a novelty. It's something we're looking at. We're rubbernecking on our way past now. All female directors, all female writers. We're looking at these things as we fly past. We're gorging ourselves on the content that's being offered, and we're loving it. Look at Wonder Woman this year. Look at the success that Patty Jenkins had this year with that movie. I cannot wait until they bag that woman and bring her over to Star Wars to tell an Ahsoka story or something at some point down the line. And let's take forward.
Oh, you're sorry, Mark, but even what you're saying, I'm sure I heard you guys talking about some the main show Talk Star Wars. Look, Kathleen Kennedy. Like, you mean she's produced my youth?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and look at the success of the movies. Like, this is it shouldn't even be a discussion anymore. Is what you mean? That's the point I was making.
Yeah.
You mean get the right people that know the right tone, the right
book.
Like,
we are getting there.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be kind of at the end of all this, I would always, and just exactly what you guys are saying, is that I don't want to be at a point where it has to be pointed out that it's an all-female creative team, or it's a female-focused book. It should just be a piece of content that comes out. And once we get past all this, like you said, these are fantastic writers, proven writers in the Star Wars universe and from around all their other work and all that. So it just needs to be, here's a Star Wars comic, here's your creative team, that's it. But we'll get there eventually. I think we will. And like you said, Mark, Star Wars in particular, for a contained universe or a contained franchise, are probably doing the most work and the best work when it comes to putting female actresses and directors and people that are running the show, not so much director yet, but people that are running the show and just saying, look, this is the content that we're getting. These are fantastic people. Like you said, Rob, these are the right people for this job and they're doing awesome at it. So I love what they're doing here. Let's just keep pushing forward with it. I'm looking forward to introducing all this little content here, this IWD stuff, to my daughter in a year or two.
Yeah. Yeah. It's ideal. It's not what I love about this is it's not what we term stunt casting in the movies. It's not like, oh, we'll put that person in there because it'll get the most attention. They're not making female driven content because it's going to be making headlines. They're making, we might already be there actually. And we haven't realized it yet, because I just realized this evening before I jumped on the call, I just reread Dr. Aphra, and I read the Dr. Aphra comic, and I felt, that's my favourite book at the moment. And I'm reading that character like she's a character. I'm not reading it thinking, mm-hmm. this is written for a girl. It's not. She's written as a compelling character. I read her the way I read Indiana Jones. You know, that to me, that she's the same character archetype. She's just this beautiful, strong woman in the Star Wars universe. It doesn't put me on the outside of that story because she's a girl. I think the way Han and Luke, they're not, women can be fans of them. Just look at Ash on the network. She loves Han Solo, and not in a girly crush kind of way. She would be Han Solo. If you asked her, you're going to cosplay, she would cosplay as Han Solo. So it's that kind of thing I'm getting from these female characters. They're being written. They are inclusive. They're not pushing male interests to one side. They can be enjoyed by all audiences.
Yep, and they're awesome. I look forward to it.
They are great stuff. So congratulations to IDW for picking up the Forces of Destiny weekly book. I really hope this is every bit as successful as the YouTube shows, and let's hope that it's a foundation for something bigger in the future.
Yeah, so we'll be seeing those starting January weekly, like you mentioned, Mark.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're going to hold. I'm not sure, Rob, if you can actually comment on this with the Star Wars Adventures. Did they hold a $2.99 price tag? They should be a little cheaper, right?
I believe so. Yeah, they're slightly, but that's I think that's IDW across the board.
Yeah,
they're usually a little bit cheaper than the
Marvel
proper.
Everything that we're reading is $3.99. I'm expecting these to be a little cheaper.
But there's no digital copy though inside, I believe.
No. Yeah.
Are the books available digitally on any platform?
But they're like the Marvel run, like we were talking about earlier, with the digital code inside. I don't think the IDWs have that.
No. I'm going to need to check. Let me just check the app. I'll tell you what, I won't do it whilst I'm in the middle of hosting a podcast. How about that? I'll check and I'll have an update on the next episode. I'll find out where these can be sourced if, like me, you are averse to leaving the house and having to buy things from human beings. All right, Tim, you put in the notes about looking at Star Wars comic book canon. So we've discussed a little bit of Star Wars canon already this evening. What did you want to discuss particularly about the comic book canon?
Yeah, so this came up a couple times in the VIP in the past, in the VIP Facebook group, TSW there. And it's come up kind of amongst the community that combo community that I'm involved in as well. And it's just this idea of combo canon. And we actually mentioned a bit of this, or talked a bit about this last time, about how Marvel seems to be handcuffed within the original trilogy, particularly between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And I just wanted to kind of point out a few things here about, yes, the true amount of volume, or the most volume that we're getting from the Marvel comic book publishing is concentrated within that original trilogy timeline, with 94-ish issues or so coming in there. But when you look at actual individualized stories, it's a fairly even split between the prequel era and the trilogy era, with, you know, we're getting 6 to 7 different comic book characters or Star Wars characters focused in the prequel era, and we're seeing about the same in the original trilogy. And it's just something I want to bring to the attention of all of us and kind of sending us a question, and just to see if everyone's aware of the fact that we do have that almost even split when we're looking at individualized characters versus actual volume. And what I also want to do with this, I kind of listed all these in the show notes, and I wanted us to actually go out and pick one or two of these different stories, and maybe down the road sometime on the next episode or two, we can actually pick one of these shorter runs, whether it's Han Solo or Obi-Wan and Anakin coming out of the prequel era, and just kind of discuss through those. But I just wanted to kind of get some insight as to if everyone's fully aware of the amount of content that we're getting kind of spread out through the majority of the Star Wars era, as opposed to everything being purely concentrated in on the original trilogy.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And what you've laid out here in the show notes, it illustrates perfectly how balanced it is.
Yeah, if you're getting outside of just pure issue, pure volume, because the original trilogy dominates that. You're double at least when you're going issue by issue. But there's a lot of stories being told in the prequel era, and there's, you know, we're starting to creep up there too within the Force Awakens timeline too, within that era of Star Wars.
Yeah, I think you want to attract a lot of people with the OT, if that makes any sense. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because everybody knows Luke, Leia, Darth, and Han. So I can see what they're trying to do. But also too, like you said, with Poe Dameron, the TFA adaptation, Captain Phasma, like we're getting new groundbreaking stories that aren't shoehorned in anywhere.
Yep. And there's a lot in that prequel era too. There's the 12-issue Kanan comic book. There's the Obi-Wan and Anakin, the 5-issue prequel that takes time between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. There's the Darth Maul, which we've talked about in the past. There's an upcoming Thrawn. There's the Vader that we're currently reading. So there's a lot in there. They're tucking into canon of characters that, you know, these are at the start of Marvel Comics when they started rolling these out. So these are even issues that I haven't read any of this, the Kanan stuff, the Obi-Wan and Anakin. And I'd love to take a poke at this at some point and see how this fits into canon, because all the comic book reading focus I've done is focused in on this original trilogy. And I myself have done it, banging on about this idea, let's get outside of this era, let's get outside of the New Hope to Empire Strikes Back. Well, they kind of have. I just haven't actually read this stuff.
Well, I've been putting my comic book guys' kids through college through all these polls. I've actually pulled everything on this list, and you're not wrong. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. We're pushing up on 200 issues within the next probably 6 months that have been produced, not including IWD, by Marvel since they got this license back.
Have they done anything? I'm looking through this list now. Is it Shattered Empire? Is that the only thing?
Yep.
Where is that positioned after the Battle of Yavin?
So that's after Return of the Jedi.
That's after Jedi. So this is the era that I want to see him explore more.
Yeah.
I think there's much more to be told there, because there's some room to trim a bit of fat. We know which characters haven't made it into the new trilogy, so their fates are going to be a little bit open within any stories they tell, right? We don't know what's happening with Lando. There's some freedom there. Perhaps that's why they're being told to stay clear.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, you think they're holding off on that?
Yeah, I think I think
just
that
because they want to. Oh, sorry, Jim.
I was going to say sorry that they've just been told you can't touch any of this. And I think we mentioned it last time, is that there's still the story to be told in this next two films, The Last Jedi and Episode 9, before they release this to Marvel, before they release this to the novelists and that, and say, here, go at it, guys. I don't know if they're talking about they could do a Star Wars story in that time frame at some point.
I hope so.
Use a guy like Sebastian Stan to play Luke Skywalker.
I hope
they look identical.
Yes, so please.
If the wheels are turning there at Lucasfilm and they're thinking, okay, well, it's the same issue they're having with the films, is that they're stuck within this original trilogy just before, just after time frame, until the handcuffs, until it gets released. And I think once that happens, once all the secrets of this new trilogy are revealed, I think we're going to see a floodgates, and we're going to leave this original trilogy timeline behind, and for most part probably leave the prequel behind, and just do everything between Return of the Jedi or even Empire and The Force Awakens, and we're going to see a ton of content come out. Until Episode 9 drops, I don't think we're going to get much. Phasma right now is the farthest we've gone in canon, this comic book, just after The Force Awakens.
Yeah, because even Poe Dameron takes place before TFA.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So they're still playing. I think after Return of the Jedi, we might need a few more big tent poles. You know, like, yeah. So we can play underneath, and then they can have at it. They can have the novels, and they can have the comics and everything else. But then the few more, even a couple standalone movies, you mean, 10 years down the road, this conversation will be very, very different, I'm sure.
Well, you know, there's the two things I wanted to add to this conversation. The first is, I think the rules you've just laid out, Tim, apply to Rebels as well. So at the moment, we don't know where Rebels is going to go. When that season wraps, when that series wraps, you might see a sudden deluge of Rebel stories being told in print and in comic books, because they're then free to go wherever they want with that story, because they'll no longer, apart from Hera's involvement in Rogue One, they'll no longer have any restrictions on what they can do with those characters. And with the downtime between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, you might find that once JJ's locked script before they go into principal photography in January, they might be free to then start exploring areas of that space, because they would have told all the stories they need to tell that involve Luke that might depend on that era being sacred.
Well, yeah, I there's this whole lead into the journey to Episode 9, whenever that starts to be released. I would imagine we're going to see a lot of comic books, a lot of books released in that time frame. Like you said, once the story's locked, okay, now it's time to lead people into this, and then they'll drop things the December after that and just kind of keep going with it.
Yep.
Well, that's like the Kanan run too. That was the answer to the question. Well, we had to order 66. Where's this Kanan guy come from?
Yep.
Oh, there's a comic book series. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. You know that's mean? It. So, every question now is like a 12 monthly answer, isn't it? It's
because Kanan was supposed to be a limited run, except it was so well received they went on a little bit.
Yeah. So
up to the 12 issues.
The smart money says that I think once JJ locks this story, and we know what story he's going to depend on from the Church of the Force, for example, in the last movie, that might then free up that story to start to be explored in the Journey to arc. So we might start seeing stories about Luke and Lor San Tekka and what they did after Return of the Jedi, exploring temples, learning about the Force. Remember, we're going to get a lot of these answers by the year's end. We're going to get a lot of answers about what Luke's been up to. So that, again, that frees up a whole bunch of stuff that they can start explaining to us, probably about Luke's pilgrimage. We might even get a mini-series that examines the time Luke spent after Ben Solo fell. So it might happen by inches. As soon as they tell their main story, it'll free up a whole group of people to go off and start crafting little stories that led to that moment. Frees up a bunch of time. So
that's a good point, actually, because we saw that coming out of the back end of The Force Awakens, is this Poe series dropped and the adaptations drop. And so we may get a little bit more freedom, or they may get a little bit more freedom in the comic book world once the film's done, to go back and explore and say, look, we're done with this for now, and you guys can go and kind of elaborate in and on it a bit. We saw that with Baze and Shirt, a book came out. We saw this with a whole bunch of different comic books that are coming out, the Thrawn stuff, once the Rebels was kind of ongoing now. So there's a lot coming out that I think, like you said, Mark, once that story has been told, there may be some more freedom with that. So I was thinking Episode 9, but you're probably right. At the end of Episode 8, we're probably going to see a whole bunch of new material coming out. And I hope we get a couple, I love a 5-issue miniseries with Lor San Tekka and Luke or something like that, just to bring a little bit more context to what we see in the films.
Yeah, exactly. It's a thing that it should never be. I have a golden rule for myself. It should never be required reading. It shouldn't be that people don't understand The Last Jedi until they've read the miniseries. But if they get the miniseries and it puts colour into the story they've suddenly got, it will recontextualise Lor San Tekka, his connection to Leia, to the Jedi. It can answer a lot of questions that we've got coming out of The Force Awakens, and help the story group do a bit of housekeeping, because JJ left a lot of things dangling at the end of that story, whether Ryan's willing to use his film to tie up the loose ends that JJ left. That could all be done by the story group in expanded storytelling, which is great. Let's use it to sort of patch up fill some cracks in. But I'm up for it. So what do you want to do about approaching some of these series then? Because you can see in the red on the show notes, I've staked a claim to a couple of things I'd kind of like to spend some time on. Do you want us to make a decision, or should we throw it out to the listeners? See if they want to pick something for us to talk about.
Sure. Why don't we throw it to the listeners? I know we spoke in depth about, or not in depth, but we kind of praised Lando a bit there. So I'm up for any of this. Maybe throw up the show notes with the podcast itself, and we let people decide as to what they want us to go through in a bit more detail.
Right. Okay. So we're going to do that then. I'll put the PDF of the show notes into this episode so you can download them from your podcatcher, and you'll see what Tim's put in the show notes about the episodes that we're looking at, or the issues, the runs that we're looking at, as our options for an in-depth bit of a deep dive sort of breakdown. And we'll take our time with it. If we don't get it all done in one episode, it can roll over. I might issue the notes where I take off which ones I lean towards, so that people, I don't want to be punished and someone say, no, you're not getting to, you've done your talking about Lando, you're not going there again.
Well, that's what I was about to say too. If you're going to do that, make sure you let me get my votes in there, and then I can.
Yeah.
Like, Rob likes nothing.
I will be open to any of these, to be honest. There are things in there that I put down, which perhaps I shouldn't have. I should have seen them through, because sometimes they work better as a whole. All right, we'll put this out.
Well, sorry, maybe we can make a little check mark. We've already covered Lando, so we can, we can take him off the list, because we've already discussed him, and now we'll leave it up. We'll just have a little check mark or something beside him saying, yep, he's done. Anybody else?
Okay. I will mark that as something that we've spent some time on already. But okay, right, where are we? All right, we better get into our comic book review. We've nearly been going for 40 minutes. So, okay, let's just move. We won't worry about a break in this month's show. Let's just move straight into our discussion of Darth Vader number 6. Have I done a breakdown? I did a story recap. Is it worth me going through the story? Let me do the story recap. Right, okay, so this is how I've seen it. I haven't had a chance to reread it yet, but this is how I saw issue 6. So Vader is in his Bacta tank. It's following is defeating Kurrikin Fallah. He's bleeding the crystal and coming back to Palpatine battered and bruised. And he's in the Bacta tank healing, as Palpatine indicates that he's going to have Vader's suit repaired. Now, I really liked this moment where Vader sort of makes it quite clear that, no, in fact, he's going to take charge of repairing that suit. It's an extension of him, a little bit like Tony Stark refers to the Iron Man suit as a high-tech prosthesis, as an extension of him as a person. So Vader clearly takes ownership of that and uses the Force to carry out some modifications. Meanwhile, I've got some issues with some of this stuff, but meanwhile, the Grand Inquisitor is making his way through the Jedi Temple on his way to Jocasta Nu's library, presumably to get access to teachings he didn't have access to previously. And Vader is alerted to the presence of the Grand Inquisitor by Palpatine. And then Vader confronts the Grand Inquisitor in a major battle action set piece, I suppose, in a comic book. And then the Emperor reveals that he's established the Inquisitors to work as an extension of the Sith. I have something to say about that also. And then we meet the gang, and we're off to the Aces. So what do you think? What was your first impressions of this issue of Darth Vader?
I don't. Okay, well, first, Vader, the back to tank. That's really cool. That's all those little things that kind of harkens back to why we're reading this whole run in, is because it's what we want to see. It's like, well, yes, more Vader, more backstory, more. I like the idea that the Emperor mentions that, yes, you were right. You were really good at tinkering with these sort of things when you were younger. So it shows that, like, Palpatine was actually watching Vader, even in his early age, like when he was young Anakin and then growing up, and or is tinkering with stuff. So I just like that. It was just a quick blurb, but I liked it saying, oh, okay, it shows that, yeah, Palpatine was actually watching him and keeping an eye on him. So that might have more implications, like, where is Anakin from? You mean, who's his dad and everything else? But aside from that, it just kind of it's a nice little tie-in. The Inquisitors, I've never been a fan of them in Rebels, but I'm glad I kind of got an answer to where they came from.
Yes.
So that's out of that book. Am I a fan of seeing him in the comic book? No. Am I a fan about the explanation? Yes. I'm glad that, like, little box is ticked off for me. So I liked it. It wasn't I think coming off of issue 5 with such high praise and it was so awesome, I just issue 6 was, it couldn't help but fall short to issue 5. But I didn't find too much wrong with issue 6. Tim?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there that coming off of the back end of issue 5 or even that arc there, following that up, it's really difficult to do. No matter what was put out there, I don't think we're going to be as high as we were last time when we talked issue number 5. It just, you can't come off of an issue that big and that had that many consequences for the go forward story and not feel slightly let down by the follow up issue. But I think that's okay. From my perspective, I actually really liked this issue. I'm going into it, I'm not a huge fan of the Inquisitors, or I wasn't, I'll say, a huge fan of the Inquisitors, because at some time, I feel like they're a bit disconnected from the headcanon that I've built up as far as the boundaries I've put on the universe and what things should look like in them and how they should be carried out. But this comic book, what it's done for me is it's taken that first season of Rebels and into the second season of Rebels and put all of that into a frame where I'm able to say, yes, this is the Star Wars that I'm happy with. This is the Star Wars. These are the stories I want to see. And because they're integrating not only this, but also the Ahsoka book falls into this a little bit. And we're going to probably get touches of that in here as well with one of the Inquisitors here that I think we're seeing in this last splash page of the whole crew standing here. But I like what they've done with the Inquisitors here. I like that they're bringing them into the comic book world and giving us that explanation that we haven't necessarily gone in Rebels. And it reframes Rebels to a degree for me as being part of, or maybe more of the Inquisitors, it reframes them as being part of something a little bigger, because I never really connected them that much with Vader and that much with the Emperor. But now seeing them all connected here and having much bigger plan and a much bigger basis behind the Sith, I know this might be a bit controversial, but that's kind of why I'm liking this book and the integration of the Inquisitors. But I also like, I think the whole book in itself, there's a focus on the Inquisitors, but there's also the focus in on Vader and Palpatine. I think that's the important point of this comic book, is that we've seen the distrust in the Vader book in the New Hope timeframe. You're starting to see the seeds of that, and that discontent, and that mistrust of the Sith built right in here, because Vader has an exact question to the Emperor and says, look, if I was defeated by the Grand Inquisitor, he'd be standing here. And the Emperor implicitly says, basically, yes.
Yeah.
And so I like that building and this relationship that we're already seeing, that, because we're still coming off the back end. We're a few, whatever, days, weeks, months removed from Revenge of the Sith. So Anakin's still got in his head that the Emperor has it all right. And now we're already seeing this discontent, this shift, this distrust that Vader has and that the Emperor has for Vader. Yeah, we've seen that in the New Hope and all that time frame, the comic books and all that. But this is the first instance of it, I think.
Yeah, I think it's reaffirming it, because we saw that in Revenge of the Sith, where we saw the Anakin killing Dooku. Now I think with this comic, Anakin's Darth/Vader is putting these. It was always in the back of his mind, but now it's like, oh wait, oh, you know what I mean?
There's a target on him.
Exactly, and maybe he didn't realize it when he was the one targeting, but now he does. Yeah. But also with these stories too, like we just got a whole arc about how the Sith get their lightsaber. And now it's like, oh, that's explained. Oh, now we get the Inquisitors explained. And then I got to, as a Star Wars guy, I got to go, well, where'd the Inquisitors get the lightsaber?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just, every time a question gets answered, there's another loose string.
Yes.
It's like almost trying to pick up 100 socks out of the dryer and trying to walk from the dryer to your bedroom, and you're going to lose a few, because it doesn't matter how many times you keep trying to pick everything up. It's like there's more that spills out. So it's like more questions, more questions.
Have you guys read the Ahsoka book?
Yes.
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. So some of that's in there about specifically the sixth brother, about, because that was the first instance of the idea of the bleeding of the crystal.
Yes.
And then Ahsoka kind of reverse bleeds it. Yep. But so again, I don't have a huge issue with, I like what they did before, but I don't have a huge issue with the Inquisitors and them having the lightsabers and that. The thing I do have is, are they all former Jedi? Did you get that impression? Because there's a line in here from Palpatine that says they are light side, or one, they're slaves to the light side. That's mm-hmm. what he says exactly. Mm. So I think that's a very specific wording, because it's not saying they were former Jedi. Now, we know the Grand Inquisitor is a former Jedi, a Jedi Temple guard, but they say slaves to the light side. So again, I'm not getting the impression here that they were all once Jedi, that the Grand Inquisitor was.
I think we're going to get that answered, because I'm even in the notes, Mark, with the last splash page. It's just going to lead up to, oh, okay, here's our final answer. So,
yeah. It's I need to just sort of say something that's kind of been hovering around in one of the dark recesses here of my mind. It's about the similarities I'm starting to see now between Palpatine and Snoke. And I'm starting to wonder, like, I've been calling back to something recently, which is a line from Revenge of the Sith, and it was Palpatine talking to Anakin about to truly understand something like the Force, you have to examine every aspect of it. I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember the exact quote, but he said you need to understand both sides, not just the narrow dogmatic Jedi perspective of the light side, and of course not just the dark side. Now, this is something that Snoke seems to value about Kylo Ren in The Force Awakens, certainly in the novelizations. It's it's Kylo Ren's ability to be both light and dark. That's what Snoke appreciates. Now, I'm wondering if we've seen a steady stream of Sith apprentices who have all had something they've wanted to achieve, that have used the Sith as a stepping stone to their goal. With Maul, it was revenge. He's a bit of a one-trick pony. But with Dooku, it was using the Sith to get himself into an influential position politically. His intention was to discard the Sith and then move forward and retain his control politically, which I think we've seen Palpatine do.
Yeah.
And what I'm starting to see now is, with these Inquisitors, is Palpatine building an order around himself that doesn't rely on the rule of two. He's built like a little squad of minions. Sure, Anakin, Vader, is his number one guy, but he's got these others now. Like, Anakin's almost disposable. We've seen that. What if the Inquisitor defeated me? So be it. Palpatine's now got a little squad. The same way Kylo has the Knights of Ren and Snoke has the Praetorian Guard. It looks like a conscious move away from only adopting one side of the Force and only having one, you know, Bane's rule of two, only having one apprentice. It's now, let's use every aspect of the Force and let's surround ourselves with a number. Is that what the Inquisitors are for Palpatine? Is it the equivalent to Snoke's Praetorian Guard, Kylo Ren's Knights of Ren?
I think you've hit it right there. I think he, like you said, he's surrounded himself with essentially a small Force using army, and stepping away from that rule of two, as far as Palpatine's perspective, I think that only makes sense. We've seen this in the Vader comic too, the original run, is that he's got all these Force sensitive cronies that are stepping up to the plate, one behind the other of Vader. And Vader's got to defeat all these to remain his apprentice. And I really don't know. Like, I like the idea of it, of, like you said, Mark, kind of likening this to what we see with the Knights of Ren, and having this larger force sensitive army behind him, or gang. I think you really hit it there. Like, to me, that's the direction that they're going here. And I don't have any issue with breaking that rule of two. That doesn't bother me. It makes sense to me that they're going to be expanding here. And why would you limit yourself to just two? I know that's, you know, that's Darth Bane. That's what he said in the past. And that's what the Sith have been about through the majority of the films. But I still like this in the background, that there are these Inquisitors, that there is this next step to, maybe it's an evolution within the Sith. Maybe it's an evolution with and utilizing all the different aspects of the Force.
Well, the rule of two also with Darth Bane, I was like rebuilding the Sith from literally ground up. And I know I'm reaching back to Legends, but either way, like even when they say it in the movies, the rule of two, rule of two. But that was to get, once the Sith, their entire goal was to take over the galaxy. And now Palpatine, the last of the run, has done that. This is a 1,000-year plan that's finally finished. So now maybe he has a little bit of a clean slate, because now the Sith are back. They're exposed again for the first time in the millennia. You know what I mean? He's running the whole galaxy, and now maybe it's okay. That was the plan, to get the plan done, and two were fine, so we can stay in the shadows. But now we have this. We've done it. So now might as well surround myself with force sensitive bad guys.
Indeed, there can be a militia inside the army.
Yeah.
Which is posing as a government. And also, Rob, you mentioned previously, Vader must feel like, you know, he's been set up here to confront the Grand Inquisitor. He must feel like he's got a cross painted on him, that this guy's coming after me, and Palpatine doesn't care if I get taken out. Palpatine, by establishing the Inquisitors, surrounding himself with a number, he's also reducing the chances that anyone's going to focus their attention on removing him, which is ultimately his downfall, as we know, because Anakin's always looking to supplant Palpatine, right? That's the nature of the Sith. So for Palpatine to introduce this new structure and say, oh no, that we're no longer just two, look, we're a number, we're this thing, that makes a lot of sense for him sort of protecting his position. Unify a large number of people behind me, and then they will all protect me from each other. And I wonder if this is what Palpatine was looking for with the observatories. When he's looking out into deep space, as he learnt through communion with the dark side, as he educated himself about another way of doing this, and that's come from Snoke.
Maybe I just that's a whole other we can drop into, but I think this kind of, the having this target on Vader's back and having it be reaffirmed in the comics, it's almost like painting this underground. So like when, like you said, Mark, when Vader goes to Luke and says, hey, you can join me and we'll overthrow the Emperor, it's like yeah, of course he automatically thought that, because he's been trained to think that.
Yeah.
You mean, but find another. Yeah,
that's the nature of the Sith. It's this deceptive manner about them. And your point about putting a target on Vader's back, what that also does is that removes the target from the Emperor's back, because Vader is now going to be looking down all the time and not up. Yep. So it's at a point when the Inquisitors are all but extinguished that Vader is now able to focus his attention on the Emperor, which I'm assuming happens eventually within the comic book, and we know within Rebels as well. So it's kind of the shift of focus almost for Vader. He knows how powerful Vader is and how powerful he could be. And now it's time to put his focus down and on the Inquisitors and onto the Jedi. So it's removing that X from Emperor as much as it is putting it onto Vader's back.
Yep. And I think we're going to need a much longer podcast to dive into that Snoke theory. I'm going to have to take a little bit of time to process that.
I love that whole deep space idea and the observatories and all that. There's a lot of potential there. That could be a thread that they put out there and just say, well, we'll pick this up somewhere. Mm. If they picked it up in here.
Well, he's looking for something, right? The story's being told for a reason. Palpatine's looking for something, and Snoke's looking back. Snoke's seen the rise and fall of the Empire. He's looking back. If the exchange they have is, you're getting it wrong, if Snoke's saying, you're getting this wrong, The rule of two doesn't work. This is the way you should be doing it. And that's the attempt that Palpatine's making. That could be what we're being taught to expect here. It could be laying the groundwork for what we're going to see in Last Jedi.
I love that.
Let's see if it plays out.
Mark, you're a king of theories, man. You continue to blow my mind.
Yeah, I just the key to it, the secret, Tim, is to say everything. And once you've said everything, something's going to have value.
Something will stick, right?
Yeah, something's going to stick. You throw enough mud. The one thing I didn't like about this book, the thing I liked least about this book, there were a couple of things that didn't really work for me, but the thing I didn't like was some of the art direction. It wasn't clear to me when the Inquisitor was making his way through the temple that that wasn't Palpatine. Because when I first read it, I thought, oh, that's Palpatine moving through the temple. It didn't register that that was a third party because, Rob, we've spoken before about the silhouette of the Sith. That's how I registered that image in those panels. And I thought, oh, well, that's Palpatine moving through. What's he doing now? He's left Vader, he's wandering off, and he's ended up in the library. What's he doing? That didn't make sense to me. Some of the art direction in this book wasn't transparent enough. They put the Grand Inquisitor on the cover. They didn't need to keep that secret. They could have exposed that straight away, right? Yep. Did you have any issues with the structure of the book in that regard?
To be honest, I didn't really ever kind of second guess that. It didn't really cross my mind that it was Vader, because the Emperor had kind of made reference to someone, and we get because we do have the Inquisitor on the front, and we get that one panel before we do go into the Jedi Temple archives, is that we do see the Jedi Temple guard here. And so I kind of made that connection. The cloaked figure was indeed the Grand Inquisitor. But I don't know. I might be not remembering the order of the book as much.
Jim. No, I was just going to say, it's just the problem I have is with the covers, and they show the Inquisitor slicing Vader's helmet in half when that has no bearing in the book. Like, it's never even close to that happening. I understand it's to sell comics, but it's like, look what happens in this book. No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's the equivalent to clickbait.
Yeah, exactly.
100%. Yeah. But yeah, actually, you know what? In retrospect and looking back on it, their move probably would have been better to not have the Inquisitor on the cover and have, I'm just flipping through the pages now, and have the reveal actually be the double-sided lightsaber, or whatever you want to call it, the spinny lightsaber as it pops out of his cloak. And, there's the Inquisitor, and kind of tease it a bit with the Jedi Temple Guard. And kind of that probably would have been a better way to go if they're going to keep the cloaked individual a bit secret rather than have him on the front. So, yeah, and looking back on this, you're probably right, Mark. It's either have it one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how we got Cad Bane in the Darth Maul comic. You flip the page and like, ooh.
Yeah, that was amazing. You know what
I mean? I like that way better than
that. Splash reveal would have been, that would have been better rather than try and tease it out.
But it makes for a great TSW comics image for the
cover
podcast.
Up.
Yes, cover it. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I will use the best image I can grab out of these books. That's something you can't do with physical books. lift images with a screen grab.
Very true.
Did you want to discuss this visual appearance of the six brother, or have you discussed that enough, Tim?
So I just want to put it out there. I don't know if it's the six brothers. So there's the splash page about with the Inquisitors here, with the Grand Inquisitor kind of standing in front of them there. Mm-hmm. And we know the seventh sister, the fifth brother, and the eighth brother from Rebels. And we have two unidentified, as we'll call them, Inquisitors that flank the other few of them. And I believe the one on the left, as you're looking at the comic book, is the sixth brother from the Ahsoka book. Just because his description from Ahsoka. So he's described as a tall, unnatural looking, gray-skinned individual with piercing blue eyes, which we can't see in here, broad shoulders, and a scar-like uniform markings on his cheeks, nose, and chin, which you can see on the chin of this individual.
Yep.
And he's got this black and gray armored bodysuit, the double-edged spinning lightsaber, and he had a helmet that was able to lift that covered and shielded his eyes. So when I'm looking at this character here, I'm seeing the sixth brother in the description for the Ahsoka book. Are you guys seeing that too, or am I kind of making a leap?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I initially thought it was Cobra Commander, but no, I think you're onto something.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I'm interested in it because I like kind of trying to break this kind of stuff down as we all have podcasts, but I like, and this is another reason I really like this book, this comic book, is that it's taking now the novels, the TV shows, and now the comic books, and tying all that together. And as someone that's a huge fan of continuity and maintaining that continuity and adhering to canon, I really like this. I really like the idea of exploring a bit more of the Sixth Brother before he goes, I guess spoilers here a bit for Ahsoka, but eventually does battle Ahsoka in that book, because I really enjoyed that book as well. So I like that we're getting kind of the origin story of the Inquisitors while also getting the origin story of the individuals that do have some implications for later on down the road for other books.
Yeah. No, good observation and great breakdown as well. I think it's really that's really insightful. Just we need to know who this unidentified guy is over here.
Yeah, the big dude on the right. I said before we started recording, it looks like Black Dwarf from the Avengers, or from the Hickman run of the Avengers, which is one of the children of Thanos. That's who it kind of looks like.
Yeah,
with some pretty rad glasses on.
Yeah, Bono's glasses. They're clearly planning a huge crossover in Disney franchises. All right, should we get to our final thoughts for this book before we wrap up for the evening? Because we're just over an hour now, so. Rob, do you want to kick us off? What are your final thoughts? What does this book leave you with?
I like it. Like I said earlier, it exposes a couple more questions. Like I know we get some, Tim was saying, we get some of those lightsaber things answered in the Ahsoka book. But it's with all these Inquisitors, it's like, okay, great. Now I know how they're there. But then I ask myself, well, are we going to explain why like they weren't noticed before, or why is it even, or are they like, there's every time they answer a question, they unravel 100 more questions, which is fine. That's not a fault of the book itself. That's just they want me to read more, and they got me. So I like that. It just, there's a few of the things going up against the last issue. Obviously it has a hard time standing up. I love the Vader back to tank stuff. I love the hints at him. He's using the Force to engineer his repairs on his suit. And we all know that you need the Force to build a lightsaber. So it kind of goes, there's little tie-ins there. I liked it. It wasn't super awesome for me, but I'd say 7 out of 10 for me.
Oh, wow. That's okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Good. Tim, I'm going to let you have the last word because I don't have much really to add to what I said earlier. I'm just going to say that, Tim, I think you mentioned earlier on there was no way this book could follow issue 5 and be anything but the issue that came after issue 5. It was never going to outshine that story. It could never be anything but connective material. At some point when someone reads this in a trade, it will just be something that I think that they blaze through. So it was only going to have a degree of success in my eyes. I'm going to stop short of saying I was disappointed with it. I'm not exactly a fan of the Inquisitors at this point, but if they are a part of something bigger, which is showing Palpatine perhaps trying to go for a different structure after abandoning the ways of the Sith, then I'm more on board than I am at the moment. They just seem like Saturday morning cartoon characters, and when set alongside Vader, it doesn't really do a great deal for me. But that, you know, I'm being a bit down on it. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10, not only because it can't follow issue 5 successfully, but to me it was just kind of like 6 out of 10, and that's about it for me. But Tim, your final thoughts.
Yeah, well, I'm going to echo both of your thoughts here is that you can't follow up issue number 5. Sitting adjacent to that, I don't think there's many Star Wars comic books that can follow that. And you're right to say that this is indeed will always be known as the book that follows issue number 5. But the thing I like about this, and this kind of goes a bit to your point, Rob, is that, yes, this does bring us a whole bunch of questions, but this has got me excited for issue number 7 because of what they've laid out here. I like the idea of tying all the canon together, the TV, the novels and comics, exploring those little areas that I did have questions before coming out of the Ahsoka books, coming out of Star Wars Rebels. And I never really liked the idea of the Inquisitors until this comic book. And I'm not saying because they do great things in this comic book. It's well done, but it's not a huge game changer for the Inquisitors. But to me, it starts to tie up some of those loose ends that we had going into Rebels. And it starts to tie up all this canon, all these questions that I really want to know more about. So going forward, I have a bit more appreciation now for the Inquisitors coming out of this comic book. And maybe that's me projecting a little bit of my hope and anticipation for what they're actually going to do here. And we're going to have to wait until issue 7, issue 8, and that to see exactly what they do, if that lives up to my expectations. But overall, I think this book successfully introduces the idea or the concept behind the Inquisitors. It shows some of this mistrust and that behind Palpatine and Vader, which I really like. That's a relationship that I want to see explored a bit more and a bit more depth. And also we're going to start to see the Jedi Purge, the initiation of the Jedi Purge. One thing that we didn't really discuss was this Jedi that was sitting at the end of this comic book. And this idea that there are other Jedi out there that are still existing that these guys are going to go chase down. So something that we've wanted, something that we've kind of heard about for years is this Jedi Purge. What happened after Revenge of the Sith? Yes, the majority of the Jedi are gone, but there still seems to be a few pockets of Jedi here and there that these Inquisitors and that Vader are going to be chasing around in the subsequent books here. So for me, this leaves a whole bunch of questions, but these are questions I'm excited to see answered. And I'm excited to see them answered with this art style and with Charles Soule at the helm.
Well said. We can probably withstand just backpedaling just slightly and just mentioning what you just said. The last splash page, setting up issue 7. Spoilers, Jocasta Nu. We mentioned her earlier on in the story, but we didn't. I failed. I should have brought us back full circle to that where we left off. Is she premium enough a character? I know I'm coming at this from a completely negative position, and perhaps I shouldn't. Is she a premium enough character for them to be going after at the start of the Purge?
Probably not, but it depends on how many Jedi are left, I guess. Mm. I didn't to be honest with you, fully honest with you, I did not pick up that was Jocasta Nu until you said that.
I think it's because she was in the movie. I mean, she was in so that's why it's like, oh, there's just another one. They didn't kill her in the movie. So, well, here she is.
I guess the other thread that you can kind of see some continuation from is that it was a bit of focus, and this might be the Grand Inquisitor's issue, is that he's seeking that knowledge. He's upset that he didn't have that knowledge or wasn't given the ability to get that knowledge by the Jedi. So he felt like he's been wronged by the Jedi Order themselves. So chasing Jocasta Nu, chasing the idea of when he's in the Jedi Temple archives, that might be some connective tissue to Grand Inquisitor going after more than Vader so much. So I don't know if there's some connectivity there, or if I'm trying to really tug on a thread that isn't there.
No, you might be right. I mean, if he's looking for that knowledge and she was the gatekeeper, it would make sense that she might be the first, but it would also make sense that perhaps Palpatine's looking for some knowledge that perhaps left the Jedi Temple with her.
Yeah.
And it also, I think it bookends the actual issue itself, because we saw them in the beginning where he saw the Inquisitor. They were in the temple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the library. Looking
in the library. And now, here you go.
I feel embarrassed I didn't pick that up.
Well, don't. I can cut it out of the episode if you like, Tim.
I really won't.
I really won't make the effort.
It'll end up on a dark side somewhere.
Okay. All right, let's wrap this one up then. So it's been a pretty good month for comic book news and for comic books in general, especially if you're a Doctor Aphra reader. This was a fascinating conversation. I think I'm going to go back and reread issue 6 now and see if I can pick up on some of the bits that I've clearly missed or undervalued. All right, we ready to back out of this, gents?
Yeah.
Anything you want to throw in before we wrap up?
Yeah, I guess I didn't give my rating.
Tim.
No, that's my bad. This is going to get you both. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. Generous, yeah. I know.
Yeah. That is pretty
strong. I'll probably
eat
my words later.
No, I think maybe I will be revising my rating next. I need to give this another reading, I think, and reevaluate, because you've obviously you two have both picked up on some value that I've missed here. But after our conversation, I think it might reframe it. And at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do with this podcast, isn't it? We're trying to give a fresh perspective to these things.
Yeah, absolutely. If I can just see one thing, just a shout out to if the VIPs are hearing this before next weekend, I believe it's 14th, 15th of October. I'm going to be at the London, Ontario Comic Con. So if any of them are in Southern Ontario or at the con, I will be poking around there probably on the Saturday. So tweet at me and you'll I'll be there.
Yeah, stick a post in the VIP group as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Let
yeah.
anyone know that might be there. And actually put it straight onto the Facebook page too, because don't just limit it to the Veeps, because most of them are over this side of the pond.
Yes.
Okay, true. Tim, what you got coming up on the Nerd Room soon?
Oh, we got this. It's going to be a big episode. The next couple, we've got some trailer reviews, Justice League, Last Jedi, of course. I made a commitment a couple weeks ago saying, I'm not going to watch any more Last Jedi stuff. And as soon as the news was announced that the trailer's dropping, I was like, we're there. So there's no way I'm missing out on this. Get the tickets dropping here on as we're recording almost.
Yes.
And it, we're going to get into some comic book stuff. We're trying to reshift our focus back to comic books a bit, more on the Marvel DC side. We do talk a little bit of Star Wars, on that, pun intended. And we're going to get into a little bit more of that. And then we've got with Thor Ragnarok and Justice League coming up, we're going to do our prelude episodes to those, talking about comic books and all that, building into those stories. And then we'll be doing a whole bunch of reviews as we get into the back half of this year.
Great stuff. Awesome. All right, gentlemen, so where can people find you? Rob, where can people find you between episodes?
Between episodes, you can find me on the TSW Roundtable. That's coming out. There's always one in between a TSW comic somewhere. And today I just finished recording with Commander Cody and Steve from the Rogue Squadron podcast and Steve from the San Diego Sabres podcast. So that'll be hitting your feed pretty soon. And that was a lot of fun today. And you can find me on the Twitter machine at RobertMMCast.
Wonderful. Tim?
You can always find me at the NerdRM on Twitter, and I'm always writing over on the TSW website as well as the nerdroom.net.
Yeah, you've had some great stuff up there the past few days. Thank you for your input on the site there, Tim.
My pleasure.
You can find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter at talkstarwars. And I do gatecrash the TSW Roundtable for a few minutes on the next episode and just make a complete mess of everything. But there you go. That's what I am wont to do. All right. We will see you guys next month. Don't forget to download the show notes. Take a little look at what we want to start focusing on. We want to sort of revisit some of these limited runs and do a bit more of a deep dive. So have your say. Email us at talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. Put TSW Comics in the subject line. I'll make sure these chaps get it. And we can take your feedback on board and do a bit more of a deep dive in some of these wonderful books. Okay, right. That's it for another month. We'll see you guys on issue number 7. Have a good one.
Bye.
Hey.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Find us at StarWarsCommonwealth.com alongside
The Tumbling Saber Podcast,
The Generation X-Wing Podcast,
Rogue Squadron Podcast,
The Skyhoppers Podcast,
The TSW Roundtable,
The Nerd Room Podcast,
and San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast.
Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world.